WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
If you can believe it, summer is just around the corner. And for some of us, that means it's time to bust out the old lawnmower and garden sprinkler. But did you know that the grass we spend so much time maintaining is actually not great for the environment? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The EPA estimates landscape irrigation totals almost one-third of all residential water use across the country. That's almost 9 billion gallons per day. But don't fear, there are alternatives that don't need to be watered as much. While some of them look more like a meadow or a prairie, some look, well, like grass. To learn more about these alternatives, we spoke with conservation scientist Becky Barak, who studies the alternatives at Chicago Botanic Gardens' Negaunee Institute for Plant Conservation Science and Action. Karen Weigert, Reset's sustainability contributor. And Mary Arntz, she transformed her Lincoln Square yard into native garden with the help of North Branch natives. I started the conversation by turning to Karen and asking about the problem with traditional turf grass. Here she is.
Well, traditional turf grass is actually an introduced species, and it's a monoculture. So it's basically one thing that we're trying to grow everywhere. And so what that means is it takes a lot of resources. So it takes a lot of water that you mentioned. It takes a lot of gas in terms of mowing. And it also takes herbicides and pesticides to try to maintain that introduced monoculture. And what that means is it also takes away from what would have been here, what could be here, plants that can be food and shelter for insects or birds. And it disrupts what would have been that native ecosystem that would rely on the space if it weren't being used for turf grass.
Mm-hmm. And Becky, we're not just concerned here about private lawns, right? A lot of grass is in public space, too.
Correct. Yeah, we think about urban parks and corporate campuses, universities. There's a lot of space that's lawn that doesn't have to be lawn. And when we talk about studying lawn alternatives, we are not coming for any soccer fields. We're not coming for any picnic areas. We know that there is a place for turf grass, but there's a lot of lawn out there that could be changed or rethought into something new.
Yeah. So tell us more about that, because I want to be clear here for our listeners. You're not anti-grass, are you, Becky?
Well, there are a lot of types of grass, actually. I like to tell people, if they learn one thing from me, it's that there's over 11,000 species of grass in the world. So when we think of grass, we might just be thinking about one thing, which is our typical turf grass, or in this area, it's really dominated by Kentucky bluegrass. But there's a lot of different grasses in the world. So anyways, we are not anti-turf grass. We understand that it has a role. But there are a lot of places that are just kind of mowed grass because they just are. And I think there's a really big opportunity to incorporate some other ideas.
As I teased earlier, Karen, there are alternatives, right, to this. What are the benefits of the alternatives to turf grass, like Kentucky bluegrass?
So when we think about the alternatives, and it, again, think about those alternatives in a mosaic that does include turf grass for soccer and other things, we're really talking about reducing that resource use, so less time and money on water and mowing and things, and really that explosion of possibility in terms of different kinds of plants, in terms of a few of those 11,000 grasses, but also flowering plants. When you think about what do the pollinators need? Where's their food source? So it opens up all of these other spaces that then create beautiful areas for us all to walk and recreate.
Yeah. Mary, at first, right, because we talked about the fact that you transformed your yard. So were you nervous about doing this, getting rid of the grass initially?
That's a great question. When we moved in, we had turf grass in our front yard. And to be honest, we were terrible at maintaining it because it does take a lot of resources, like was mentioned previously. And so we really began reimagining what could happen there. Mm-hmm. And we got in touch with North Branch Natives, and they presented a whole new vision for our yard, which is great. Now, we do have little kids. So one thought was, what happens when the grass goes away? It's a tiny front yard, but they had been using it for things like playing catch and other activities. So we realized over time, as they got older, what we'll do instead is go to the local park and use the turf grass areas there for the activities that they like to do.
An adjustment of, you know, lifestyle, if you will. What was it about what you learned from North Branch Natives that changed your mind, would you say?
Well, just that they prepared a plan for us and taught us how to do this transition. I kill houseplants, left to my own good ideas.
Join the club.
Bad ideas.
Join the club.
So
yeah.
I'm not a gardener by any means. So really just having folks who could lay out a plan, and even they actually grew the plants and brought them over to our yard and transplanted them. And we got started from there, and they would check in and make sure we were not killing our plants yet. and it's been a great success.
Yeah. What does it look like now?
So if you were to look at our yard, you would still see a lot of wood chips because we're still trying to keep the turf grass at bay and any other weeds. But there's a lot of little baby plants planted about a foot apart from each other, different varieties. And we're starting to see some blossom, which is really exciting.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. The kids, are they loving that?
They do like it. Some of the older kids in our building, they help with the weeding, and so we're all kind of learning together.
Yeah. Becky, let's talk about your project here that started back in 2022. Your team planted 8 experimental plots with a mix of grasses and native plants. So talk more about the plants that you chose here.
Yeah, so the Rethinking Lawns project is a collaboration with a few different institutions in the Chicago area. So I'm at the Chicago Botanic Garden. We're also working with the Chicago Park District. And then we have a collaborator at University of Michigan Flint also. And so we have experimental plots at the Chicago Botanic Garden and then at 2 places currently in the Chicago Park District, with demo gardens in a few different other places in the Chicago Park District. And so we really think about these lawn alternatives as a menu of options, a range of treatments that can vary in how diverse they are or whether they contain native plants or not. So kind of the most straightforward plants that we're looking at are just substitutions for Kentucky bluegrass. They look a lot like turf grass. They're non-native. We use fine fescues. And they can really look a lot like turf grass, but they have deeper roots than our regular Kentucky bluegrass, which anybody who's ever pulled up sod knows that these Kentucky bluegrasses have really short roots.
Okay.
And that is why they have to be watered so often. So there are these fine fescues, which can kind of sub in for Kentucky bluegrass, that have deeper roots. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be watered as frequently, and they grow more slowly, so they don't have to be mowed as frequently. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an easy, like, one-to-one swap, basically, for turf grasses. And then the things that we're testing kind of get a little bit more complex with the addition of native species of grasses, native sedges, which are similar to look a lot like grasses, but are a different type of native plant. And then some of the treatments contain native wildflowers. And then we're also testing prairies, prairie restorations, because we're trying to see if any of these shorter plantings that have native plants in them can do as well as a prairie can when we think about things like pollinator support, stormwater infiltration, and storing carbon in the soil.
Very interesting. You talked earlier about just the experimental plots not needing to be watered as intensely as turf grass. Say more on that.
Yes.
Because that's an important piece.
Definitely. All of our plots that aren't our control plots, which are Kentucky bluegrass, we water them in for about 3 weeks when we first plant them, and then we have never watered them again since. And this has been 3 years of no water. And so part of the benefit of using native plants, or even some of these non-native species like fine fescue that have the deep roots, is that they have deep roots. They can use the water that is available to them. And so they don't need to be constantly watered the way people have to water turf grasses.
What are your neighbors saying, Mary? Any comments?
Sure. Our next door neighbor was thrilled to see, and he actually looks over the fence regularly to check on our little baby plants and cheer them on.
Sounds like a neighbor.
Yeah. So it's been really positive. We also have elementary school kids who walk down the sidewalk in front of our house every day to go to school, and they walk through through our garden on our little footpath. So it's really nice to see the neighbors interacting. We've had only positive reactions.
Yeah. And you have a story I hear about pulling up the sod.
Oh, yeah.
What happened there?
So our neighbor in the building and I went to Home Depot one day to get a sod cutter, which I don't know if anyone has ever used this machine, but it is 300 pounds.
And can't say that I have.
No. So we also had to rent a truck with a ramp to get this back to our house. We're not the patient kind, I guess. So we just wanted to get the turf grass out of there so we could get this plan in motion.
Yeah.
So we spent the better part of a day you know, just like taking the grass
out.
Oh,
my goodness.
To Becky's point, the roots are really shallow. It came up pretty easily with this giant machine. Then we had to figure out what to do with all the old sod because you can't put it out with the regular yard waste. So we drove it to Elgin and sent it on its way in this big, like,
that's quite the process.
Industrial sod pile. but it was a bonding experience. And now we can, you know, show our work for it in our yard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Becky, what pollinators are you seeing coming to the plots that you've got right now?
So we have seen honeybees as well as native bees. There are definitely bumblebees coming to the plots. In one of the years we were there, we saw a lot of monarch poop. We knew the monarchs were there because their caterpillars were pooping so much. But we saw monarch poop. We saw monarch caterpillars. And we don't keep track exactly of the species of pollinators currently that are coming to visit, but we know that there are native bumblebees that are coming to visit the plots.
Yeah. And Karen, you know, just kind of revisiting what we started out talking about, you know, homes versus public land, like what the work that Becky's doing. Talk about scale here.
Yeah, one great factor of this is that every little scale matters. So the small front yard and then the larger places in the parks, it all connects into this bigger ecosystem. Because if we're talking about a bee, it's going to fly around in some places to go. And it's really interesting just to think about the park district because there are almost 2,000 acres that are now native landscapes and areas throughout the city. So no matter where you are in Chicago, you can see that. But it then scales up the benefits of much less water being used and much less fuel being used. But it also creates these experiences. So anywhere you are, there's a park probably nearby that has a native plant area that takes out right angles and the sharp edges of the city, and you can wander through a little bit of wilderness and have a different experience.
Yeah. And Becky, you're working on a pilot right now with the Park District?
Yeah. So we are actually working on some new research where we're looking at habitats that already are existing in the park. So the Chicago Park District has been converting some turf grass areas to natural areas like prairie restoration, as well as some of these kind of in-between lawn alternatives that we would think about, like maybe sedge-dominated spaces. So we've been just starting actually this month, we've been collecting data in some of these, within these parks, in the lawns of the parks, in the lawn alternatives in the parks, and then in the natural areas within the parks. And we're trying to look for differences in these different land use types in the parks in terms of how they work with supporting pollinators, with taking in stormwater, and even contributing to urban cooling. So if you see some...
Could this reduce that urban heat island effect?
So yeah, there is some data to show us that even transitioning from turf grass lawn to another type of grassland or a prairie can make it cooler in that area. So we're trying to see if it's cooler for the plants and if it's cooler for people in the nearby area, depending on what the type of planting is that you're standing in.
Mm-hmm. Do you have advice, Mary, for folks listening who might be considering transitioning their yard?
Well, I asked my neighbors who live in the building with me what they would say, and they said, just start now, don't wait. And I personally have enjoyed my experience with North Branch Natives. They are great coaches and just walk you through the process as much help as you need. So if you're like me and you have a hard time making decisions or you don't feel like you know what you're doing, reach out for help and they'll be great.
Becky, advice from you. I think that'd be super helpful.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like it's kind of goes together and kind of the opposite. My advice is to start small and be patient because some of these native plants can take time to grow. And when you're buying in native plugs, they can be really small and it can take a few years before they really start to grow and flower. So that's the patient piece. And then the starting small piece is that it's kind of, it's good to have a plan, because if you are going to, you know, kill your lawn in a huge space and not have a good plan for it, then you're going to have issues with weeds, like Mary was mentioning. Mm-hmm. So we recommend that people start small with maybe a path, or like alongside a path, or in a parkway if you're able to plant there. Some places you can, some places you can't. But if you kind of start small and learn the process of getting native plants planted and established, then you can kind of expand out each year as you figure out what you like, what you don't like, what succeeds in your yard, in your particular soil, and what doesn't. And then you're able to expand out from there.
And Sasha Ann, I would add from our experience that the transition to native is very different from maybe a commercial landscaping experience. To add on to what Becky was saying,
yeah.
I thought, oh, these plants are tiny. And what is this going to look like? It's not filling out, you know, all these things. And so it really, it does take time. That's one thing I'm learning. and it's going to be fun to see how it all evolves over time.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave it there. That's Karen Weigert, Reset's sustainability contributor. Mary Arntz, who transformed her Lincoln Square yard into a native garden with the help of North Branch natives. And Becky Barak, who's a conservation scientist at Chicago Botanic Gardens' Negaunee Institute for Plant Conservation Science and Action. Thank you all so much. Very interesting stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Micah Yasin. If you like our conversations, well, we hope you stay with us and keep listening. You can subscribe to the show wherever you listen or on our website at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again this afternoon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.